This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Start. Bismillah, alhamdulillah, salatu salam wa rasulullah ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man wala, thumma amma ba'd, to proceed. Today, inshallah, we'll start a new segment or section. Maybe we have talked about this before. They divide fiqh sometimes into two branches. And sometimes they divide it into three branches, and sometimes they divide it into four branches. So the two-prong division of fiqh would be fiqh al-ibadat and fiqh al-mu'amalat, simply, which is fiqh of worship and fiqh of interactions. And then when they want to divide it into more subdivisions, they divide it into fiqh. And why is that? Because adat is ibadat, basically the fiqh of ibadat regulates your relationship with God. The fiqh of mu'amalat regulates your relationship with others, as-siwa, everything else, or the creation. And now they wanted to single out you from the creation, so they have a three-pronged division where they have fiqh al-ibadat, that is fiqh of worship, how to regulate your relationship with God, and then fiqh al-mu'amalat, fiqh of interactions, how to regulate your relationship with the creations, and then fiqh al-adab al-shara'iyya wal-adat, the fiqh of adab shara'iyya, religious etiquettes, and customs. This is basically about how to regulate your own conduct. This does not involve a second party. It is not regulating an interaction between you and a second party. When you walk into the bathroom with your left foot, does that have any, is there any sort of interaction here with somebody else? No. So when we talk about fiqh of family, there is an interaction here between you and your spouse, you and the guardian. It's an interaction. But when we talk about, you know, eating from the right side, eating from the side that is next to you, the side of the dish, presuming it's a large one, that is next to you, kul mimma yaliq, eat from the side that is next to you. Certainly here, if you're eating with people, that also involves a little bit of interaction. But generally speaking, you know, like even if you're eating alone, to eat with your right hand and so on, that's adab shara'iyya. These are religious etiquettes and customs, adat. And then if you want to divide it into four different types, you will also exclude from the rest of the creation the judiciary, because your relationship with the judiciary is different from your relationship with the rest of the creation. It is not a relationship between equals. So they have fiqh al-qada wal-hudud wal-zinayat, the fiqh of judiciary. Hudud would be prescribed punishments, zinayat would be penal laws. So that's a four-pronged division of fiqh. Today, we are going to be discussing a segment of fiqh al-adab al-shara'iyya wal-adat, the fiqh of customs and religious etiquettes, or religious etiquettes and customs. Fiqh al-at'ima, that does not involve an interaction between other mukallafin, which is other accountable creations, but it involves what is halal and haram for you to eat and drink. I called it fiqh al-at'ima wal-ashriba, the fiqh of foods and drinks, for basically clarity. But if you notice, Imam Ibn Qudama called the kitab, kitab al-at'ima, the book of foods, and he did not say wal-ashriba, and drinks. Because according to the Hanbalis, and it is a controversial issue, drinks are foods. You know, liquid is considered still ta'am, and they basically argue that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said إن الله مبتليكم بنهر فلما فصل طالوت بالجنود قال إن الله مبتليكم بنهر فمن شرب منه فليس مني ومن لم يطعمه فإنه مني فمن شرب منه الله سبحانه وتعالى will test you by a river that you will come across. Whoever drinks from it is not from me, like it is not part of my group, and whoever does not drink from it, فإنه مني, he is from me. What did he say? Whoever does not drink, وَمَنْ لَمْ يَتْ طَعَمُهُ. So he used ta'am to refer to drinking. And Allah, the Prophet ﷺ said about Zamzam, ta'amu ta'min wa shifa'u suqm. So the water of Zamzam is food for those who need food and a cure from disease or cure from illness. So then the Hanbalis would consider ma' to be part of the mat'umat or the at'ima. So at'ima does not only refer to solid foods, according to the Hanbalis, but it also refers to liquids. So that's why he said Kitab al-At'ima, the book of foods. And then in Imam ibn Qudamah rahimahullah, who died in the year 620 after Hijrah, in his book al-Umda, which is a Hanbali manual or primer of fiqh, said وَهِيَ نَوْعَان. وَهِيَ meaning the at'ima. نَوْعَان حَيَوَانٌ وَغَيْرُهُ. حَيَوَانٌ وَغَيْرُهُ. They are of two types, animals and others. And the reason why he said al-at'ima and he did not say kitab al-ta'am, although ta'am, which means food, is ism-jins, you could have said kitab al-ta'am. And it would not be, it is basically a name for the genre of all foods. Ta'am is a name for the genre of all foods. But he wanted to use the plural to infer something. He wanted to use the plural versus ism al-jins to infer something to us, which is that there is a variety of at'ima, and they come of different types and they have different rulings. There are like animal foods and non-animal foods. There are permissible foods and non-permissible foods, and so on. So that's why he wanted to use the plural and did not just say kitab al-ta'am. And he started by saying that there are two major types of foods, hayawanun wa ghayruhu, animals, or that, you know, animals and others. فَأَمَّا غَيْرُ الْحَيَوَانِ فَكُلُّهُ مُبَاحٌ إِلَّا مَا كَانَ نَجِسًا أَوْ مُضِرًّا كَالسُّمُومِ. As for all foods other than animals, they are permissible, meaning they are all permissible, except for that which is filthy or harmful, such as poisons. He said, filthy, najis, or mudar, harmful, such as poisons. And that will take us to addressing, you know, there is so much here in that statement that needs to be broken down. First, he is starting by saying كله مباح, all the non-animal foods are مباح, except for such and such, to refer to a major legal maxim or قاعدة فقهية. That major legal maxim is الأصل في الأشياء الإباحة, or الأصل في الأعيان الإباحة, the default concerning things, أشياء, all things, or all substances, you know, not actions, substances. There is a difference between actions and أشياء, أعيان, things, substances. So the default concerning all things, not actions, all things, is permissibility. Is permissibility or non-liability. Permissibility or non-liability. It's called الأصل في الأشياء or الأعيان الإباحة. Al-Asl means the default in Ashiya, all things, not actions. Because when it comes to actions, for actions, we have ibadat and we have adat. We have ibadat and we have adat. Al-asl fi al-ibadat al-hazr. The default concerning worship is? Prohibition or restriction, maybe you could say restriction, until you know you have evidence that this is mashru' or this is prescribed. But when it comes to al-adat, al-aslu fi al-adat al-ibaha, when it comes to customs, so worship and customs. When it comes to customs, what is the default? Default is ibaha. Permissibility. Default when it comes to worship is? Restriction, hazr, which is abstention, until proven mashru' or prescribed. But here we're talking about things. Things, a'yan, actual things that Allah had created for us on earth. What did Allah say about them? In Surah Al-Baqarah, هو الذي خلق لكم ما في الأرض جميعا ثم استوى إلى السماء. It is He who created for you all that which is on the earth. خلق لكم, created for you. You know, سخر لكم, in other verses, subdued for you. So, for you means everything is permissible for you. That puts the burden on the one who claims permissibility or the one who claims impermissibility. It puts the burden on the one who claims impermissibility. So, default regarding all things is ibaha or permissibility. Why did he, though, restrict this qaida or this maxim? When he spoke, he said, and keep in mind that these fuqaha, they were just great. They used very precise language, and you can draw benefits from every word or every letter in every word. Or conjunction, or any, you know, everything, you could draw benefits from their language. So he says, فَأَمَّا غَيْرُ الْحَيَوَانِ فَكُلُّهُ مُبَاحٌ. As for all foods that other than animals, غير الحيوان, other than animals. Why did he say this? Because we will come later when we talk about slaughtering, when we talk about zakah. It's not zakah, it is the. You know, you can't get an Egyptian to do this, right? Because, whatever comes out of the tip of the tongue, usually we have difficulty with that. But it is the ka with a dhal, which means to make permissible, to make the animal permissible by proper slaughtering. So we will come to talk about the ka. It is going to be a different story. When we come to talk about hunting, Saeed, we're going to use a different qa'ida or maxim. What is the qa'ida or maxim that we would use? Sheikh Sa'di rahimahullah, in his Manzumat al-Qawa'id al-Fiqhiyya, says, وَالْأَصْلُ فِي الْأَبْضَاعِ واللحوم والنفس والأموال للمعصوم تحريمها حتى يجيء الحل ف فافهم هداك الله ما يمل. So, والأصل في الأبضاع واللحوم. And the default concerning الأبضاع, الأبضاع would be the intercourse. A reference to intercourse. A reference to, you know, sexual relationships. واللحوم, and that would refer to meats. لحوم, plural of لحم, meats. والنفس, and it refers to blood. You know, so it refers to life. والأموال, it refers to not only currency or money as you think of it, cash, but property, everything that is your property. والنفس واللحوم والنفس والأموال للمعصوم, of the inviolable. So the life and the property of the inviolable. Inviolable, المعصوم, is who? A Muslim. That's it? No, that is not it. It's actually four different people. You deserve this isma by four different things. Islam is certainly at the top of this. Then you have ahd, that would be the mu'ahid or the mu'ahad. And then you have zimma, that would be the zimmi. And then you have a man, that will be al-musta'man. So ahd is the treaty. Those who sign a treaty with you become inviolable. Zimma are the non-Muslim subjects of the Muslim country. Those are also inviolable. A man are the people of a warring enemy that have sought asylum or security from you, and you have given them, even they belong to a warring enemy, no ahd here, and they are not from your land, no zimma here, but they have sought security, then, and you have given them, and you should give them security, and then they become inviolable. So four things would make you ma'soom, inviolable. Islam, ahd, zimma, aman. Islam, ahd, treaty, or agreement, contract, covenant, whatever. Zimma, being a non-Muslim subject of a Muslim land. And aman, security. And as we said before, with after the United Nations, the League of Nations, the United Nations, Muslims are involved in treaties with all countries, the division of, you know, Dar al-Islam, Dar al-Kufr, the sort of, we can have Dar al-Islam and Dar al-Amn, where every Muslim is basically free to practice their religion with security. Then we would call this Dar al-Amn, and we would make the default for the whole world Dar al-Amn, land of security, until it is not. You know, the default does not mean it would never change until it is not. You know, if Muslims are persecuted in one place, that is not Dar al-Aman or Dar al-Amn. It is not a land of security. But anyway, والأصل في الأبضاع واللحوم والنفس والأموال للمعصوم تحريمها. So the default concerning all of this. So why is the default impermissibility to make you extra cautious? When food, that is, which food? Meat. Be careful. Make sure it is halal. And with sexual relationships, be careful. Make sure it is halal. Food, meat, make sure it is halal before you eat, because the default is impermissibility. The life and the property of others, the default for them is impermissibility. So you need to verify the halalness there, of them before you take them or claim them or pursue them. تحريمها حتى يجيء الحل, their impermissibility until the حل comes or permissibility comes, until permissibility becomes known. فافهم, so understand, هذاك الله, may Allah guide you, ما يمل, that which is being presented to you. You know, from أملا عليه, from إملاء, which is to present something to people by, and whether they will be writing it or not writing it, but your presentation, وليملل وليه بالعدل, your presentation to them. Anyway, so then we have different stories here. Non-meat foods, the default is permissibility. Meat foods, the default is impermissibility. Be extra careful. That takes us to another discussion. What about things that have come from meat sources, but they are not meat? They are likely permissible until proven otherwise. It gets a little bit contentious here. What about enzymes? What about the cheese thing? Cheese things. You know, Imam Ahmed, and that is the position that is adopted in Al-Iqna and Ghayat Al-Muntaha and many Hanbali books, Imam Ahmed was asked about cheese. He said, eat any cheese regardless of the source. He was asked one more time about cheese, and then he said, but specifically about the cheese of the Zoroastrians, he said, La Adri, I don't know. But he then said, and that's because of his wara and his piety. But then he said that the most authentic report we have, which clearly talks about his leaning, because he goes by reports, and he goes by reports from the Sahaba. So he said the most authentic report that we have is Umar's saying, Samullah alayhi wa kulu. You say the name of Allah and eat it. When Umar was asked about the cheese of the Zoroastrians, Samullah alayhi wa kulu. You mention the name of Allah and eat it. So now the story of the enzymes is an interesting story. So we can say, for instance, that in terms of explicitly allowing enzymes of dead animals, there is a report that's not the authorized report in the Hanbali Madhab, although it's a very strong report in the Hanbali Madhab, chosen by Ibn Taymiyyah as the stronger. And the Hanafis would explicitly say that enzymes of dead animals are permissible. Enzymes of animals that have not been properly slaughtered are permissible. Why? Because they are liquid, not flesh. So they are not alive to become dead. And when the animal died, that najasa bil mujawara, the fact that they are within a container that is najis, does not render them najis. Is that clear? So they are liquids, they are not flesh, they are not alive to die in the first place. And the fact that they are in a container that is najis will not render them najis. So enzymes of dead animals are fine. Now, there is a little bit of a nuance here, although khinzir or porcine enzymes would take the same ruling, but they did not mention this. They have been silent, or they have explicitly forbidden porcine enzymes. So they did not clearly, but that is a bit strange, because Imam Malik himself, as in Al-Bayan wa Tahseel, a book by Ibn Rushd, the grandfather, was asked about this, enzymes of pigs in particular, And he said, لا أحب أن أحرم حلالا. I don't like to make impermissible that which is permissible. أما أن يجتنبه رجل في خاصة نفسه فلا بأس به. As for someone avoiding it for himself, you know, out of wara, there is no harm in this. But clearly Imam Malik is saying that I am not going to make this forbidden. If someone wants to avoid it out of wara, that is fine. Yet when they talked about, when the latter scholars addressed the time of codification of fiqh, addressed porcine enzymes because of the intense sort of repulsion toward pork, they did not apply the same rule of enzymes of dead animals to porcine enzymes, those who spoke about it. The earlier ones, it did not matter for them. And we can say also that for the earlier ones, they did not make the distinction between porcine and non-porcine, because when they were asked, about the Zoroastrians. The Zoroastrians ate pork. The Zoroastrians did not believe in the prohibition of pigs or pork. And they killed pigs, and their enzymes would have come from pigs, but they did not specifically make that distinction, the earlier ones. They, in the more authentic reports and the better traceable reports, as in Abu Dawood, he reports from the Sahaba that they ate the cheese of the Zoroastrians and did not inquire about it. They ate the cheese of the Zoroastrians and did not inquire about it. The opposition, the Malikis and Shafi'is, and the other report in the Hanbalis, would argue that they had thought it was cheese of the Christians. Christians ate pork at that time. But regardless, they argue that they may have thought it is the cheese of the Christians. That didn't solve it, doesn't solve it completely, because the Christians at the time did eat pork. So then we have a report that is questionable in terms of its traceability to the Prophet ﷺ, that he was himself asked about the cheese of the Zoroastrians, and he said, الحلال ما أحله الله في كتابه والحرام ما حرمه الله في كتابه وما سكت عنه فهو مما عفى عنه. So al-halal is what Allah had made halal in his book. Al-haram is what Allah made haram in his book. And what he was, God, Azza wa Jalla, silent about is exempt, pardoned, excused, etc. Afan, okay? Overlooked it. If this is not traceable to the Prophet ﷺ as an answer concerning the cheese of the Zoroastrians, it is traceable to Salman al-Farisi authentically. At least it is a statement of a Sahabi. Meaning what? Meaning eat it. There is no prohibition in the Book of Allah about the enzymes of their animals or cheese. Having said that, it seems to be the overwhelming concurrence. They divided like I told you, they were divided over the enzymes of dead animals. They were more assertive about the prohibition of the enzymes of pigs. But there is like strong concurrence among the scholars, particularly the earlier scholars, that you do not ask, you do not investigate. You do not ask, you do not investigate. That is everything that is reported from them. You know, al-Mabsut, in Saraqsi al-Mabsut, Imam Ahmad, when he was asked about the cheese of the Zoroastrians, Imam Malik, when he was asked about their cheese, you do not ask, you do not investigate. That is clear. When Ibn Hajar al-Haytami talks about this in Tuhfat, in his Tuhfa, it's a Shafi'i scholar, and it's a Shafi'i book, so Tuhfat al-Muhtaj. When he talks about this, he corroborates the statement of Malik, and he says, as for the Levantine cheese, Jubni Shami, Levantine cheese, that people say is made with the enzymes of pigs, it is halal, don't ask. Presume that it is halal, don't ask. That is what Imam Ibn Hajar al-Haytami said. What Imam Ibn Taymiyyah said is along the same lines. He specifically talked about the Franks, you know, that is the fringe, that's the Crusaders. He was asked about the cheese of the Batiniyya, the heretical groups, some heretical groups that had esoteric explanation for everything in the Sharia that is counter to the apparent. That is why they were called the Batiniyya, and they were considered kuffar by Ahl Sunnah. When he was asked about the cheese of the Batiniyya, he said, we have two different opinions. They are both excusable. The Muqallid can take whichever one. He said, we have two different opinions. One report from Ahmad, which is the position of Abu Hanifa, impermissible. The Malikis and Shafi'is, and another report of the Hanbali Madhab, impermissible. And he said, the Muqallid can take whichever one. And why is he saying this? Because the controversy is a strong controversy, excusable. All of them are mujtahid imams. He said the muqallid can choose. And that is true. When the disagreement, when it is not clear for you which one is stronger, is not clear for you which one is the intent of the legislator, you can choose. Now, you're not going to scan all of the mazahib to find the easier positions, but when you come across a position where there are two credible positions, you can choose. Having said that, he did not only limit, but he in another place in his book or in his fatwa, he did clearly express his leaning, and his leaning was with the Hanafi position that it is okay and it is permissible. That was his leaning. But in that particular segment, he was talking about the muqallid having the choice to take whichever position they want to take. When the question that was posed to him was about the cheese of the Batiniyya, he extended this to the cheese of the Zoroastrians and extended it to the cheese of the Franks. He said they claim that they don't slaughter their livestock or their animals. So the same story that we have nowadays. It's pretty much the same story that we have nowadays. The Franks, they said that they don't slaughter, although they are Kitabis, although they are Christians, but it is the same dilemma. It is said that they don't slaughter their animals. So what about the cheese? He said, follow whichever position you want to follow. In a different place, he argued on behalf of permissibility. That is the Hanafi position, that is one report within the Hanbali madhab. So when we say, وَالْأَصْلُ فِي الْأَبْضَاعِ وَالْلُحُومِ وَالنَّفْسِ وَالْأَمْوَالِ لِلْمَعْصُومِ تَحْرِيمُهَا حَتَّى يَجِيَ الْحِلُّ فَافْهَمْ هَذَاكَ اللَّهُ مَا يُمَلُّ. When we say this, we are specifically talking about meat, not byproducts, not derivatives, specifically about meat. When it comes to enzymes, when it comes to non-meat, basically parts of those animals, then it is not basically set in stone that the default is impermissibility, that the default is impermissibility. So to sum up, the default in all things, not actions, is permissibility. Actions, we will have worship and customs. The default in worship is restriction. Default in customs is permissibility. Out of al-ashiya, which are things, not actions, we will exclude al-luhum. Al-abda is referring to sexual relations. It's not referring to the thing. It is referring to the action. But an-nafs wal-amwal, it is referring to the life and property. So still, all of this would pertain to actions, not things. But out of that default of permissibility in all things, meat is excluded, and that is according to the preponderant position within the four mazahib. But out of meat, enzymes and, you know, non-meat parts of those animals are not impermissible by default, by agreement. There is here disagreement. And the preponderant position, based on all of the reports that we mentioned from the Salaf and Imam Malik and Imam Ahmad and so on and so forth, is what? Is this position. These things are permissible. But based on the close to the agreement of the earlier scholars and righteous predecessors, when uncertain, what do you do? Don't ask. Therefore, we don't need to basically comprise books of haram ingredients. We don't need to teach our teenage kids basically textbooks of haram ingredients and demand of them to read the ingredients all the time and then use their app or use their textbook to refer to what is halal and what is haram. There are certain things that are out there in your face that are haram. Avoid them. So if it says lard on the package, avoid it, and things of that nature. But otherwise, you don't need really to go to extremes in investigating these ingredients and their halalness. And this is my position. Certainly, this is not the only position, but this is what I believe in and what I believe to be the spirit of the Sharia and the attitude of the pious predecessors and the earlier scholars, including the great imams. So going back to his statement, وَهِيَ نَوْعَانَ حَيَوَانَ وَغَيْرُهُ فَأَمَّا غَيْرُ الْحَيَوَانَ فَكُلُّهُ مُبَاحٌ إِلَّا مَا كَانَ نَجِسًا أَوْ مُضَرًّا كَالسُّمُومِ. They are of two types, animals and others. As for all foods other than animals, they are permissible except for that which is filthy, najis, or harmful, such as poisons. So now he starts to talk about why things would be, food where the default is permissibility, why some would not be permissible. And he says, he gives you two illas here. One of them is najasa, filth. And the other one is, what is this? And the other one is darar, harm. Okay. So now let us talk about why some things would be haram. And I may actually need to go a little bit down there and let me come to this. These are two. Let me come back to this to talk about the illah when we talk about the individual haram animals to eat. And then we can talk about all the reasons why some of them would be haram and how can you figure out if a particular animal, if someone, for instance, if you went to like some country, for instance, where they eat everything, and somebody presented to you something that you've never heard of, how could you tell if you should eat it or not? Personally, if you were me, I would not eat anything that I have not heard of before. But some people are a little bit more curious and like adventurous. It is fine. But let me first get over the drinks, and then I will come back to the foods and talk about this particular issue that he mentioned here, which is najasa and darar, as two of the reasons why something would not be permissible. So the Sheikh says afterwards, وَالْأَشْرِبَةُ كُلُّهَا مُبَاحْ إِلَّا مَا أَسْكَرَ فَإِنَّهُ يَحْرُمُ كَثِيرُهُ وَقَلِيلُهُ مِنْ أَيِّ شَيْءٍ كَانْ لِقَوْلِ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ كُلُّ مُسْكِرٍ حَرَامٍ وَمَا أَسْكَرَ مِنْهُ الْفَرْقِ فَمِلْءُ الْكَفِّ مِنْهُ حَرَامٍ. All drinks are permissible except those that cause sukr or intoxication. Those are forbidden, whether large or small in amount, regardless of their source. This is because the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, every intoxicant is haram, and that which will cause intoxication in the amount of al-farq, which is somewhere about 16 to 100 pounds or liters. Pounds or liters? I think pounds, but because they are different. Pounds are different. It's about 16 to 100 pounds. A handful of it is also forbidden to consume. Anyway, it is not about the 16 to 100 in particular, but if it is large and can intoxicate you in large amounts, then it would be impermissible in small amounts. So he says here, all drinks are permissible except those that cause sukr. Is that true? Does it mean that you can drink blood? So he wants you to, like, he's counting on you remembering the last paragraph. And remembering from the last paragraph that filthy, najis, and harmful are not halal. So you cannot drink blood, you cannot drink poison. He's counting on you remembering this. And then he says, because like I said, for the Hanbalis, ashriba is part of the at'ima. Ta'am refers not only to solid foods, but also to liquids. So he's saying, "What ashriba kulluha mubah, illa except ma'askar, illa ma'askar, and implied whatever I have mentioned, in addition to whatever I have mentioned, which is the impermissibility of filthy and harmful. As for the ashriba in particular, aside from these two reasons of prohibition, we have another reason for prohibition, which is intoxication." And he says, in any amount and regardless of the source. As Umar radiallahu anhu said, نَزَلَ تَحْرِيمُ الْخَمْرُ وَهِيَ تُصْنَعُ مِنْ خَمْسَةِ أَشْيَاءَ الْعِنَبْ وَالتَّمْرُ وَالْحِنْطَ وَالشَّعِيرُ وَالْعَسَلُ. So, نَزَلَ تَحْرِيمُ الْخَمْرِ وَهِيَ تُصْنَعُ مِنْ خَمْسَةِ أَشْيَاءَ الْعِنَبِ وَالتَّمْرِ وَالْحِنْطَةِ وَالشَّعِيرِ وَالْعَسَلُ. the prohibition of khamr was revealed while it was being made, when it was being made, of five things: grapes, dates, wheat, barley, and honey. Therefore, champagne, whiskey, anything, all of this, doesn't matter what the source is. Apples, whatever, cucumbers, whatever they'll make it out of. It does not matter. What matters is it intoxicates, because Umar at the end of this, and not only Umar, it comes from the Prophet, kullu muskirin haram. The Prophet said every intoxicant is haram. But Umar said to explain the meaning of khamr, wal khamru ma khamar al aql. After he mentioned the five sources, he said, wal khamru ma khamar al aql. And khamr is whatever covers, confounds the mind. Khamara, you know the khimar of the sisters? Okay, so al khamr ma khamara al aql. The khamr is whatever covers the mind. Okay, that is why some of the scholars, like Nawawi, Ibn Taymiyyah, Ibn Hajar, and others, do not make any distinction between intoxicants that are not in a liquid form, like hashish, like marijuana, like opioids, wherever they come, like in their plant form or whatever form that is. They do not make any distinction between that and khamr. So intoxicants are not only, from like the liquid intoxicants, but to these scholars, there is no distinction whatsoever. So they can apply all the rulings of khamr to the non-liquid intoxicants, solid intoxicants, whether they are of plant origin or chemical origin, whatever origin, to them it's the same. Now you have people like Al-Hattab and Al-Qarafi and Zakaria Al-Ansari, great scholars as well, who made a distinction between khamr and those other intoxicants. It is basically without examination of the reality of their effects, the effects of wine and the effects of non-liquid intoxicants, if you will just go by reports, you would be more inclined to the position of the first group, Nawawi, Ibn Taymiyyah, Ibn Hajar. You would be inclined towards their position because it makes sense. It doesn't matter if it is liquid or not liquid. At the end of the day, if it is intoxicant, it is khamr, because al-khamr ma khamr al-aql, kullu muskirin haram. And you would be as'ad hazzan bil adil. You would be sort of more supported by reports, transmitted reports. However, given the different effects between khamr that is of alcoholic origin, that is alcohol that causes intoxication, and these other intoxicants, we can say, at least I can say, you don't have to say it, I can say with confidence that the position of Al-Hattab and Al-Qarafi is actually stronger. It is not, those intoxicants are not khamr. Remember this. I hope that I mixed it with my statement so that it doesn't get cut and pasted. Remember this. They are all haram because they confound the mind. There is no disagreement between the scholars about the haramness of things that would confound your mind, that would impair your judgment. The question is whether they are haram because they confound your mind, or they are haram by the mere sharing of the name of Khamr with Khamr? Is it qiyas lughawi? Is it qiyas? Is it like an analogy that it's at the level of language where it is not actually a technical analogy? They are saying that these things are called Khamr. The very text of Revelation that speaks about Khamr speaks about hashish and cocaine and everything else, about marijuana and cocaine and everything else. The same text. There is no reason here for analogy or extrapolation or anything. But this is not the position that I believe in. I believe that all those things are haram because they impair the judgment or confound the mind. However, they don't take all the rulings of Khamr. Having said that, which rulings will they not share with Khamr? One, you will not apply the hadd on someone who got high on marijuana or whatever, opioids. Two, you will not consider them all, you will not rule them all out in terms of medicinal uses. You could use them as we use morphine all the time in medicine. You could use them for medicinal purposes. Three, it will not render you najis if you touch them because they are not necessarily khamr. So they are not najis al-ayn. I don't believe that khamr to begin with is najis al-ayn, but this is also a minority position. The majority believe that khamr is najis to touch. But that's a different issue. But even if you believe that khamr is najis to touch, you don't have to necessarily believe that these things are najis to touch. No had, not najis to touch, medicinal uses are okay, whereas medicinal uses of khamr are not okay by agreement, particularly when we talk about al khamr as sarf or pure khamr. The prohibition, they are haram because they confound the mind. So that is as far as ashriba are concerned, and we said that every intoxicant is haram, but the idea here is the word muskir that the Prophet ﷺ used does not have to necessarily apply to marijuana. For convenience, we use intoxication to translate muskir, but muskir would apply to the set of effects that alcohol produces in a human subject. That set of effects that alcohol produces are different from marijuana. Anyone with the littlest knowledge of toxicology or medicine would, or experience, would understand the differences between the two. So that is why I am saying that these things are not muskir. They confound the mind, therefore they are haram by agreement, but they are not muskir because they don't produce the same set of effects that are produced by khamr, alcoholic beverages. Okay. Then the Sheikh said, وَإِن تَخَلَّلَتْ الْخَمْرُ طَهُرَتْ وَحَلَّتْ وَإِن خُلِّلَتْ لَمْ تَطْهُرْ. And if Khamr returns into vinegar by itself, it becomes pure and permissible to consume. However, if it is turned into vinegar by human intervention, it does not become pure. By human intervention is between parentheses because that is an addition from me because it is the verb is in the passive voice. It does not talk about human intervention, but that is what is meant. خُلِّلَتْ, made into khal or made into vinegar, it is presumed by human intervention. Okay, so that is another issue here. red wine, vinegar, and all of these things. Now, if you want to avoid them out of wara, that is certainly commendable. Are they haram? That's another issue. And don't ever mix the two. On your on a personal level, in your personal practice, be as wara as you want to be. But when it comes to halal and haram, وَلَا تَقُولُوا لِمَا تَصِفُ أَلْسِنَتُكُمُ الْكَذِبُ هَذَا حَلَالٌ وَهَذَا حَرَامٌ لِتَفْتَرُوا عَلَى اللَّهِ الْكَذِبُ. So don't say to that which your tongues are like, to the falsehood that your tongues ascribe, this is halal and this is haram, to fabricate lies against Allah. You know, so it is not up to your liking or your wara when it comes to halal and haram. That is something that should be left to the mujtahids, and your own choosing is not to be forced on people. Okay, so now, by agreement, if khamr turns into vinegar by itself, it was left, you know, unintentionally left in the heat, in the sun, and then people came back and found it spoiled. That's another word for them, you know, for not, like not, a non-Muslim, if you leave your khamr, you come back, you find that vinegar, that's spoiled, because it is cheaper now. So you found that it became vinegar. By agreement, this vinegar is halal to consume. This is a weird agreement. Why? Because it relies on a concept called the istihala, which means transformation. Once something has transformed into something else, does it do the same rulings of the initial substance carry over to the second one, to the end product, or not? The Shafi'is and Hanbalis will say not. And the Hanafis in theory, and the Hanafis and the Malikis will say yes. That's the opposite. So the Hanafis and Malikis will say the new substance does not have anything to do with the old substance. If it has transformed ontologically, then its rulings also will be transformed. Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah, despite his Hanbalism, chose that Hanafi and Maliki position, which is also a position within the Hanbali madhab, because it seems stronger. That when the name and the attributes of a substance change, the rulings of it should change as well. The rulings of it should change as well. That is also the position of Ibn Hazm. But despite their disagreeing over this principle of transformation and whether transformation will render the new substance different, completely different in rulings from the old substance, they agreed on this one particular application. If khamr turns into vinegar by no human intervention, that vinegar is halal. Now, if khamr turns into vinegar now by human intervention, is this vinegar halal? So, who said halal? Hanbalis and Malikis. Who said haram? Shafi'is and this is Hanafis. Hanafis and Malikis, halal. Haram, Shafi'is and Hanbalis. Okay. So, Hanafis, Malikis, halal. Shafi'is, Hanbalis, haram. Why? Shafi'is and Hanbalis said that, and this is reported by Muslim from Anas. He was talking about Abu Talha. Abu Talha had orphans under his care before Khamr became haram, before Khamr became decisively haram. He had purchased the Khamr to invest for the orphans, from the money of the orphans. He had purchased Khamr to invest for the orphans. He used some of the money of the orphans to purchase Khamr, to later sell it and invest their money for them. Went to the Prophet ﷺ and told him the story. What did the Prophet ﷺ say to Abi Talha at that time? أهرق الخمر واكسر الدنان. أهرق الخمر, spilled the khamr. But not only أهرق الخمر, واكسر الدنان, and break the vessels. Break the containers. Yeah. Destroy the containers. Okay. That is somewhat unexpected. You know, this is one of the things, you know, this and the wasila, the two things that are fatwas of the Prophet ﷺ that would surprise you until you come to terms with them. These are orphans. Why are we doing this? Okay, so the Shafi'is and Hanbali said simply because vinegar does not become halal if you have human intervention, and that is the strongest proof that it would not become halal, because this money of the orphans, you know, was most deserving. These were most deserving of leniency. They were orphans, most deserving of leniency. And if the Prophet ﷺ said, أهرق الخمر وأكسر الدنان, that means there is zero tolerance. No leniency whatsoever can be shown to anyone. Now, this is exactly what the Hanafis and Malikis used to say that no, it is actually halal. Because they said that this level of strictness was intended at the beginning of the prohibition of khamr to create this sort of psychological partition between people and khamr. Like, if the Quran came down now with the prohibition of khamr, and then a day later someone is trying to make exceptions and say, but I just bought this for the orphans, and, you know, can't we just, like, you know, make it into vinegar or something like this? So the Prophet ﷺ wanted to create the sort of this repulsion, aversion, like extreme aversion to khamr, that he said, and break the vessels. The Hanafis and Malikis would say, do you believe, Shafi'is and Hanbalis, that breaking the vessels is mandatory? The Shafi'is and Hanbalis would say, no. You can take the vessels, wash them, and use them. They said, why don't you do the same thing? Why don't you say that this order was to show strictness at a time when it is warranted, but it does not mean that this is all mandatory? And that eventually, because vinegar is vinegar after all, it is not intoxicant, the name and attributes have become different, why don't we go back and say that when the names and attributes, and they were consistent, faithful to their principle, the Hanafis and Malikis, that transformation renders the new substance completely different, having different rulings. And although Ibn Taymiyyah agreed with the Hanafis and Malikis on the principle, because of the strength of the hadith and because of his Hanbali orientation, he did not agree with them on this particular application, that khamr would be halal, that vinegar from khamr would be halal even with human intervention. He sided with his own madhab here because of the strength of the hadith. So keep in mind that these people were not basically, they were not lax, they were not modernist. They were trying to seek the truth, to pursue the truth. And that's how we should think of our imams. And despite my Hanbalism, I tend to always like to have sort of qawa'ad muttarida, like principles that I will not break, to make the law coherent in my mind and to come to terms and to be comfortable with the law. I like ongoing principles that would not break. That's more of a Hanafi kind of inclination, although I'm Hanbali. But this is, sometimes you can have those inconsistencies. That is fine. But I wouldn't consider it an inconsistency. Anyway, when it comes to ad-dab', for instance, that we will come to talk about in the next lecture, which is hayyina, the permissibility of hayyina. The hadith is there that hayyina can be eaten. The hadith has been deemed authentic, that hayyina can be eaten. The hadith also that the Prophet ﷺ forbade every fanged predatorial beast, fanged canine teeth, predatorial beast, is there. And it is more authentic than the hadith of the hyena. And the hyenas are fanged predatorial beasts. So when you find someone like Ibn al-Arabi, who's not a modernist, who's not an anti-Sunni or anything, saying, I can't absorb their prohibition of eating foxes because they are predatorial, when they only prey on chickens, and their sort of approval of eating hyenas, which eat human beings, prey on human beings. I relate to Ibn al-Arabi. I relate to that line of thinking. But I do not have a problem with some people who say, since the hadith of the hyenas is established, whoever told you that the hyenas in particularly don't have this sort of extraordinary characteristics that would make them different from all predatorial animals, and that would make their meat tayyib or wholesome. That's a line of thinking that is completely acceptable. But we don't have to be accusing each other of laxity or excessiveness. We just need to calm down and figure out that these things, people like reasonable, well-meaning people, could arrive at different conclusions using the same principles and coming from the same sort of background. Inshallah, when we come back, we will talk about the different animals and what is halal and what's haram in terms of animals.